Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Days and two episodes of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with Bob Bailey. Enjoy.
Johnny Dollar.
Monsieur Dollar, you will be amazed. You will be thrilled.
Yeah, well, I think I've had all the thrills I need here in Paris. And who are you?
I, monsieur, am the night clerk here in the hotel.
Oh, well, what's all the excitement about?
Monsieur Dollar, I have the telephone call for you and monsieur.
Yeah.
It is wonderful. It is the long distance. It is the transatlantic.
A transatlantic call?
From the, what you call the United States.
Well, bully for you.
But across the ocean. It must be the most important.
Yeah, well, put them on and we'll see.
Oui, monsieur.
Hello?
Johnny?
That's right.
George Reed here.
Well, George. All right, clerk, you can get off the line now.
What, Johnny?
You hear me? Clerk?
But, monsieur.
Come on, hang up.
Very well, monsieur.
Now, George, you get my cable report on the only jewels?
Yes, you did a great job in spite of all the money you threw around. I mean what you gave that man de Marsac. But listen, I'm glad I caught you before you left.
I'm flying on back tonight. See you in Hartford in the
morning. No.
What?
Contact Mr. Maurice Rigaud there at our Paris office.
Oh, what about? Getting those jewels back to America?
No, that's all taken care of. But in talking with him a minute ago, I happened to mention that you're there, so he wants you to stay around and see if you can help locate a Cellini medallion.
Cellini? The famous Italian artist?
Yes. And the medallion was stolen from the galleries of the Louvre 2 or 3 weeks ago. Priceless. So it has to be found and returned to them.
Well, I'll do what I can, George.
Good. I'll contact this man, Rigaud, at our office there immediately.
Contact Rigaud, huh?
That's right. But why do you say it that way?
Because maybe I won't bother him.
What?
George, maybe I've got a better idea.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the intriguing adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. The Floyd's of England, North American office. Or maybe it's the Paris office. We'll see. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Embarcadero matter. Expense account item one, a few francs. Call it 10 cents American for a telephone call. Not to Rigaud at Floyd's of England, but to my old underworld contact, Louis de Marsac. The strange little character who calls himself the Great Cat.
Oui, oui, Monsieur Dollar. C'est la chagrie. You most loyal, most faithful friend.
Yeah, I'm sure. Are you living it up on that money I gave you for locating the only jewels for me?
Oh, alas, Monsieur, I have been most unfortunate. Only one small, what you call, investment. And now...
Easy come, easy go, huh?
Oui, the 5,000 is gone. And I was so sure of this one.
What kind of an investment, de Marsac?
Well, even you would have been attracted. Oh, she was young. She was so beautiful.
She? Oh, no.
Ah, oh, that Marcel. How could such a lovely vision deceive me so? Oh, I'm crushed, a man without hope. And, monsieur.
Yeah?
I'm also very, what you call, broke.
Uh-huh. Think $100 might help to raise your spirits?
$500? Oh, oui, monsieur. But for what?
$100. For some information. About what happened to the Cellini medallion.
Oui, stolen from the Louvre.
Oh, you know about it, then?
But of course.
You know where it is?
No. But for you, mon ami, I will somehow find out.
Good.
But it may be dangerous, monsieur. The people I will have to see, the cutthroats I will have to pay for the information... But for you and the $400 you have promised me.
Okay, $150. Want to call me when you've got the dough for me?
No, if I bring the information to you, I can then collect for it right away. $200?
I'll wait to hear from you. Okay, now, George, don't flip your lid over some more money for de Marsac. After all, he knows more about what goes on in the Paris underworld than any other man alive. And if in a day or two he can come up with the information I need, I'll put it this way. He saved the company a lot of time and money in the past, and I'm sure he can do it again. Also, if his poking around is as dangerous as he seems to... Yeah? Well, come in, come in. De Marsac.
Oh, oui, monsieur. De Chagui. Oh, the dangerous mission you sent me on is a fait accompli.
But I only talked to you on the phone about an hour ago.
I've wasted no time. You have the $300 for me?
$150. You have the information?
Oui, the Cellini medallion.
Well?
Well, it's on the way to your own country.
On the way? How?
Hidden away in the case of wine aboard the ship, the Klemperhal, out of Le Havre.
The Klemperhal, huh? Destination?
San Francisco.
Now, when's it due to arrive there?
Late tomorrow night. The cargo is many cases of wine. Yes, bottles of wine. The medallion is hidden away in one of them.
You're sure of all this, de Marsac?
But of course, mon ami.
Because if I fly all the way to San Francisco and find out you're giving me a wrong steer...
Oh, no, no. How can you, my oldest, my dearest...
Yeah, sure. Now, this means that someone over there is going to have to pick it up.
Oui, at the warehouse at the pier. And Monsieur Frank Gastel.
Gastel?
You know?
If he's the one I'm thinking of. A fence who used to operate New York, but they can never pin anything on him?
It must be the same.
But in the shipload of wine, how will he know which case has the Cellini medallion in it?
By this mark, mon ami.
Yeah?
So?
A tiny circle, yeah? With a Maltese cross in it.
Oui, like so.
Okay, de Marsac. I better pack up and catch a plane back to the States.
Mon ami.
Oh, yeah, sure. Here you are. 50, 100, 150.
Oh, oui, monsieur, such a dangerous...
Okay,
170, 90, 200. Ah, merci. Merci beaucoup. Bon voyage. Oh, success.
Wait a minute.
Eh?
You dug up an awful lot of information in a very short time, de Marsac. Even about that mark on the case of wine.
Oh, but of course, monsieur. You see, I put it there myself.
You what?
Oui, when I helped my friends to smuggle the medallion aboard the ship...
Expense account item 2 is the couple of $100 to de Marsac for the information about the stolen Cellini medallion. Item 3, $92 American for my hotel there in Paris and a taxi out to Orly. Item 4, $5.99 even plane fare, Paris to New York to San Francisco and a taxi to my favorite hotel, the Huntington, up on Nob Hill. A pea soup fog had settled over the city, and the driver had to practically feel his way the last couple of blocks. By the time I cleaned up and changed my clothes, it was late and I was hungry. And after the long plane trip, I was glad for a chance to walk over to the Fleur-de-Lis on Sutter Street. Cocktails and a rare good dinner ran up item 5, $11 even. Then I started back to the Huntington, again on foot. I say I started. It was late, remember, and dark. Not many people on the streets. And suddenly I was conscious of someone behind me, slowly catching up with me. In the fog, he was only a shadow. But I was sure he was following me. I slipped out my gun under my coat and slowed my pace. All right, brother, what? Huh?
Yeah. Hi, Jai.
Smokey Sullivan.
Yeah.
Well, what under the... How are you, Smokey?
I thought that was you coming out of that Fleur-de-Lis. Hadn't you better put that back in your coat, huh?
Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, listen, you're just the man I want to see.
Yeah?
Yeah. And if you can dig up some information for me about somebody, I'll make it worth your while.
You're real good to me, Johnny. I'll do anything I can. And listen.
Yeah?
I don't know why you're out here this time, and maybe this ain't got nothing to do with it.
What's that, Smokey?
I've been hanging around the docks the last couple of days, down to the Embarcadero.
Doing a little honest work for a change?
Yeah. I'm real clean now, Johnny. I've been going straight.
That's the stuff.
But I know how to keep my eyes open. You know what's going on down there?
What?
Smuggling, Johnny. There's a lot of smuggling all the time. You know what I mean?
Keep talking, Smokey.
Yeah. Well, most of it comes in from Japan and China, places like that. It's the boys on the boats bringing stuff in.
Ah. Well, what I'm interested in...
Narcotics, Johnny. Mostly heroin. stuff like that.
Yeah, well, now, Smokey, when you get any info about that kind of stuff coming in, you tip off the Treasury boys, the narcotics division.
Me, Johnny? Me go to the cops?
You mean because of your past record?
Yeah, they wouldn't believe me, Johnny. That's the trouble with going legit. I mean, the kind of guy I was.
Don't ever kid yourself. I don't want to lecture you, Smokey, but believe me, it's the best way in the world for you to make up for some of the things you've done in the past. Look what you've done in helping me.
Yeah, I know. And it was you got me going straight. But don't you see, if anybody was to find out that I was informed...
Don't worry. The Treasury boys will never talk.
Okay, Johnny.
But now, the man I'm interested in...
But now, like I was going to tell you...
Smokey, listen.
Like I said, most of this stuff is from the Orient. But down there to the docks, a couple of nights running now. Well, Johnny, you ever hear of Frankie Gerstel?
Are you kidding? That's the man I was going to... You mean the one who used to be a fence back in New York?
Yeah. Long time ago, I'd done a couple of jobs for him. That was before, you know.
You've seen Gerstel around here?
Down to the Embarcadero.
Sure. Waiting for the Klemper Hall to pull in from Europe.
The Klemper Hall, Johnny?
Yeah.
With a cargo of French wine?
Yeah, that's it. How do you know?
I helped unload it.
You what?
Yeah, come in ahead of time, early this morning.
And I got here too late.
Huh?
Or maybe I haven't. Come on, let's get on down to the Embarcadero. Item 6, $1.50 for a taxi. Pier 93, where the Klemper Hall was berthed, was dark. Except, that is, for a dim light in the office on the street side. Back in the huge warehouse, extending out over the waters of the bay, there wasn't even a glow from a nightlight.
Sure funny, Johnny. They're not having some kind of a light in the warehouse.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out about that for the watchman there in the office, if we can wake him up.
Yeah. Sleeping on a job like that, why you?
Hey, watchman. Watchman, come on, open up.
Johnny.
Yeah, I see. Come on, Smokey, give me a... Here we go, now. All right, wake up, mister. Come on, I said wake up.
Yeah, Johnny. He's asleep, all right. For good.
Fog shrouded San Francisco and the Embarcadero at night. There in the little office on the shore end of Pier 93, we found the watchman. Found him dead with a bullet in the back of his head. Which meant that in all probability, Frankie Gerstel had gotten there before us. Had already taken the Cellini medallion out of its hiding place. Or was it still there, one of the cases of wine stacked up in the warehouse on the long, dark pier? There was only one way to find out.
Okay. We better get out of here, Johnny. If the cops come around to find this watchman laying here dead, even with Johnny Dollar to explain it...
Reach up and pull off that light, will you?
But, Johnny...
All right, here, I'll do it.
But, look, don't you see, if the cops come around, they see this office dark...
Yeah, we got a chance. Now, if this watchman had a flashlight on him...
Yeah, in the side pocket of his coat.
Side pocket, here. Yeah, here it is.
What are you going to do, Johnny?
I'm going back into that warehouse.
But, Johnny, don't you see? If you put on the lights back
there...
That's
why I've got this flashlight. I've got to locate a case of wine in there with a peculiar mark on it.
Something else in that case?
A priceless medallion that was stolen from the Louvre. It was smuggled in so Gerstel could pick it up.
But if he's already been in here and taken
it... Well, I gotta make sure. Now, you wait right here.
Johnny, if a prowl car comes down the street...
Okay, shove the watchman's body under the desk. Turn the light on again and sit there in that chair with your hat pulled down over your face. If a prowl car comes along, wave to it.
Whatever you say, Johnny.
If anybody else comes along, tries to get in here, yell bloody murder and get out the best way you can. I'm going back in the warehouse. And don't switch on the lights in there.
But be careful, Johnny.
Yeah. The light in the office, when Smokey turned it on again, made only a thin yellow line beneath the sliding door. That showed me nothing. That seemed only to accentuate the gloomy darkness of the huge warehouse. Cautiously, I felt my way to a pile of crates, stuck my head around the corner of it and flicked on the flashlight for a moment to get the lay of the land. Bales, crates, packing boxes, and barrels filled the place. the cargo of the Klemper Hall. And there at the far end were the cases of wine I was looking for, hundreds of them. After mentally plotting a course through the mass of shipping, I turned off the flashlight and worked my way back to them in the darkness. Finally reached them. Yeah, when I tilted one of them, it gurgled slightly. I was about to flick on the light again when I realized that if Frankie had come here, if he'd killed the guard but hadn't left, yet somehow I had to find the case with the identifying mark on it. I put on the light again. And there in front of me was a case that someone had pried open. The cinch bar was lying beside it. On one corner was the mark that... Someone. I heard someone else in there. Behind me. Behind one of the packing cases I'd felt my way around in the dark. I heard him again. So I picked up the cinch bar. And I waited. Then... Holy... At least I'd seen the flash of the gun. But again, I waited.
Give up, Dollar. I've been here over an hour. I can see in here, but you can't.
Now, well, I can see the flash of your gun.
You see what I mean? Dollar?
Just keep on talking, Frankie.
What? What'd you say? Dollar!
The cinch bar. All right here, Frankie!
Now, that's a stupid trick.
Too close. No, wait a... Hey, your last shot, wasn't it, Frankie? Yeah. Hey, Smokey. Okay, Smokey, come out here in the warehouse. Turn on the lights and we'll...
Didn't figure I had two guns, did you, Dolly? But you haven't. Not now. You're through. And by the time you can reload... Yeah, Smokey, put on the lights. I can use them now.
No, Smokey, no.
That's right. Leave him on. And, Dollar, I'm gonna dig you out from behind those crates and kill you. You hear me, Dollar? You can't get away. Yeah, because now I see you. So I pull this trigger.
Smokey.
Johnny, I took the gun off the dead watchman. Are you all right, Johnny?
Yeah.
Are you all right?
Yeah, sure I am. You saved my life, Smokey, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome, Johnny. But listen, the cops are coming.
Yeah, I hear them.
Well, then, Johnny...
Stop worrying, Smokey.
But don't you see...
You're on their side now, remember?
But if they... Yeah, I guess I am.
Sure. Cellini medallion in Frankie's pocket. It was pretty obvious that he'd killed the watchman, taken the medallion out of the wine case and was about to leave when we'd showed up. Smokey's shot had killed him. Had Smokey been worried, too, when the police barged in on us. But now he's a public hero. Oh, sure, there'll have to be some kind of a hearing on the whole affair. My deposition's already in. But Smokey's really in the clear. As for the couple of $100 I gave him, well, forget it, George. It came out of my own pocket. So, expense account total, including the trip home, $1,174 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Instead, let me say hi to three new CBS affiliates. They're KAAB in Hot Springs, Arkansas, WRIG in Wausau, Wisconsin, and WOMI in Owensburg, Kentucky. Welcome to CBS Radio. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Forrest Lewis, Vic Perrin, G. Stanley Jones, Tony Barrett, and Frank Gerstle. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Cubberly speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Johnny Dollar.
Betty Lewis.
Huh? Oh, hi, hon.
Marry me?
Well, what's that?
I said, will you marry me?
Oh, just round up a preacher and I'll meet you at the church.
Serious, Johnny? You were, you rascal.
Well, with you, Betty, I sometimes wish I could. No, wait a minute. Catch me still half asleep this way. Betty, what under the sun are you doing up at the crack of dawn?
What are you talking about? It's almost 8 o'clock.
Exactly what I said, the crack of dawn.
You just spoiled, Johnny, and... Well, I don't know whether to forgive you this time or not.
Uh-oh, now what have I done?
My housewarming party.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. It took me 3 months of hard work to get my new little house fixed up out here. No visitors, no fun, no nothing
Betty,
to work. And then when I do invite you and you accept...
Betty, honest, listen. This is crazy business of mine.
Better be good, Johnny.
Well, I was out in Eugene, Oregon, and there was no way...
Eugene, Oregon?
Yeah, one of those last-minute things, insurance investigation. There was no way I could get out of it.
Honest?
Honest. I only got back late last night. But I'll make it up to you. I swear I will.
Well...
Let's see. Today is, What? Betty. Hello, Betty.
What's the matter, Johnny?
You're asking me those gunshots.
And if I suddenly groaned and dropped the telephone, would you come running out here?
Are you kidding? What?
Only I cannot tell a lie. That was just some hot rod kid with a cut-down convertible.
Oh. Backfire, huh?
Yes. Every morning at exactly 8 o'clock. You can set your watch by it.
Are you sure that's all it was?
Well, if you don't believe it, why don't you come over here and see for yourself? Tomorrow, maybe?
At 8 o'clock in the morning?
Sure. And, honey, I'll cook you the greatest breakfast you ever had.
Yeah, but...
Maybe even convince you that married life isn't such a bad idea after all.
On the strength of a platter of ham and eggs?
Tomorrow.
Hey, look, why don't we go somewhere tonight? I'll take you out to dinner and...
No. If you're really sorry about missing the party, if you really do want to see me...
Well, sure I do.
All right, then. Tomorrow morning for breakfast.
Betty.
Bye, honey.
So, why not?
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Mr. Pat McCracken. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the backfire that backfired matter. I know, Pat, you haven't assigned me to a case. I also know I hadn't the least idea that having breakfast with my best gal was to be only the beginning of an insurance investigation. Before it was over, I'd be lucky to get out of the whole mess alive. But believe me, that's the way it worked out. So if there's any question about your company paying this expense account, well, just read on. Okay, then. Expense account item one the following morning, that is, $4.25 for a tank full of gas for my car. By the unearthly hour of 7:40 a.m., I was on my way to far out beyond the edge of town to 11325 East Maple Drive and the newly acquired domicile of my date for breakfast, Betty Lewis. Now, I'm not used to this early morning stuff and was kind of surprised to find so much of the world wide awake. It was warm and pleasant, too early for the scorching summer sun. Front lawns of the rather nice homes in this section glistened with dew. The fields and trees were filled with millions of birds, all singing their heads off, with squirrels chattering away. Yep, real pleasant. Something I'd have to try again sometime. Betty's place, which I hadn't seen before, turned out to be a very cute one-story affair, coral roof and shutters to match.
It was set comfortably in between a couple of somewhat larger homes. As for Betty, who stood there at the front door waiting for me, well, I don't know how she does it, but that ever-loving doll, even at this hour, looked as smart and attractive as any man could want.
I just can't believe it. And it's still a full 6 minutes before 8 o'clock. Oh, hi, honey.
Yeah, so early in the morning?
You mind?
I do not. Come here, yeah.
Oh, Johnny. Gee, what this morning air does for you. Come in, huh?
Said the spider to the fly?
Oh, sure. I make no bones about it.
Your neighbors used to seeing this sort of thing?
Oh, sure. I've been having strange men in for breakfast every day.
Uh-huh.
You know, just so the neighbors wouldn't be shocked when I finally dragged you into my trap. How do you like it, Johnny?
Oh, yeah. Hey, looks real nice, Betty.
Of course, if I had some nice guy to share it with. If you had any sense, you'd marry me, you know.
Yeah. And if I had any sense, I'd get out of this crazy business of mine. Then maybe I could settle down to something like a normal life. 9 to 5 and some air-conditioned office, a nice home to come home to, maybe raise a family.
Johnny, you know darn well you'd never be happy with that kind of a routine humdrum existence.
Oh, no?
You know it as well as I do. And I guess a gal could get pretty miserable wondering where you are, if you're getting slugged or shot at, maybe dead somewhere. But we do have fun together.
And I'm all for it.
That is, when you're not standing me up for some glamorous redhead on an excuse you're working an insurance case.
Betty, so help me. On a stack of Bibles.
Oh, sure. But come on, or your eggs will be overcooked. Now, you sit right there when you can look out the window and drink your juice.
Yes, ma'am.
You really like my country estate?
Yeah. Hey, who lives in that big house across the road?
Oh, old Mr. Barton J. Robinson. Used to be an attorney.
Robinson, sure. He's the one who prosecuted that big insurance fraud a few years ago for one of the companies I serve.
See him there eating his breakfast?
Bachelor, isn't he?
Yes, he lives all alone.
I think I'd better warn him to stay away from you, that you're my property.
He's the most punctual man I've ever seen. If he isn't there when I'm eating my breakfast, I know I've overslept. Here, now. And if you want some toast...
Got it. Hey, Betty, I've been thinking.
Yes?
Well, maybe it's just my crazy criminal mind, but...
Thinking about what, Johnny?
About that. Holy smoke.
You know, I've got so used to it morning after morning.
Two of them.
No, crazy kids.
You know who they are?
Oh, somebody had the police come out here a couple of mornings, but of course they didn't show up then. And I guess everybody else has just got used to them the way I have. Now, let's eat.
Funny, though.
What?
A crazy backfire. Once they get past here, they stop it.
Well, don't worry about it.
But I should have. I should have worried plenty about it. Perhaps if I'd been a mystery writer instead of an insurance investigator who's used to solving mysteries after they've happened, well, I would have had sense enough to act right then, immediately. Or maybe... Yeah. Maybe there was still time. And you have no idea who those two are, the ones who go barreling by in that hot rod every morning?
Nobody could seem to find out, Johnny, and as I said...
Yeah, everybody's got used to the noise of that backfiring. But listen, Betty...
Why don't you eat your breakfast, honey?
You call them kids, but they aren't.
Honey, please... I thought we were just going to have breakfast and talk and sort of make up for lost time.
I'm sorry for that. But now, look.
Honestly, do you have to dream up a lot of mystery and intrigue about even the most normal things that happen?
They cut the backfiring just as soon as they got around that curve. 3CFU160.
What?
The license on that car.
Oh, Johnny.
Hey, listen, honey, let me use your phone. Didn't I see one right here in the living room? Oh, yeah.
But why? And, Johnny, your breakfast will get cold.
Be right back. My phone call was to Jerry Wilson, who worked in the Department of Motor Vehicles. It took him a few minutes to dig into the files for me, but when he came back to the phone, his answer was short and to the point.
Sorry, Johnny, but you must have made a mistake.
You're sure about that?
Absolutely. But what happened? Why do you want to know?
I'm just curious, that's all.
Oh, now, Johnny, I know you better than that.
Back, Jerry, and thanks. Thanks a lot.
Now, Johnny.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
Oh, I I guess you're right, Johnny. About driving a wife crazy, I mean.
I was right about that car.
What?
That license on it is a phony. There ain't no such number here in Connecticut.
All right, so a couple of kids didn't have enough money to buy a license.
I tell you, they aren't kids. Now that I've had a chance to think about it, I'd swear there was something familiar about the looks of the one beside the driver.
Oh, sure, some nasty criminal you've tangled with and... Oh, Johnny, listen, this isn't why I asked you out here, to cook up some deep mystery.
Hey, Betty, this lawyer, this Barton Robinson who lives in the big house across the road.
I don't care about him, Johnny. I care about you.
You say that every morning at the same time he's there beside that window eating his breakfast, the same time that car comes roaring by.
Yes. When he's here, that is. He was away for 5 or 6 weeks.
Until when?
He must have come back last night. This morning's the first time in 5 or 6.
Uh-huh. And when did this, those hot rodders start coming around?
Oh, well, I guess it was about a week after Mr. Robinson went away.
Casing the China.
What? Johnny, for heaven's sake.
Betty, listen to me. You probably won't forgive me for this.
Johnny.
Now, listen. Sometimes when I'm working on
but
a case...
You're not, dear.
Well, sometimes when I run out of leads, well, all I have to work on is a hunch.
3 months I've been
but
waiting.
But strangely enough, the hunches usually pay off.
I wasn't going to tell you until
so
later.
So, maybe my hunch is right this time.
But I called the office and told them I wouldn't
because
be
because I got a real big fat one about that car.
I thought you could go somewhere, drive out in the country,
oh, I'm
maybe.
I'm sorry, honey. I really am
like
sorry.
Like I said, kind of make up for lost
but
time.
But I got to get on this thing, and right now...
Oh, Johnny, how can you do this
Look,
to
I'll
me?
Pick you up tonight. We'll have dinner, take in a show, make a night of it, anything you want. I know that walking out on you this way is a dirty trick, and if you want to, you can just tell me to... Please, honey, tonight for sure.
Oh, sure, Johnny. You know what a pushover I am.
Thanks, hon. See you later. I set out to find that car, who owned it, and why the big backfire racket in that particular spot day after day. There was a purpose there, I was sure of it. Not just a couple of kids out on a tear. Besides, they weren't kids. I'd seen that for myself. Because of the way the car had taken the curve down the road, it left a very clear set of tire marks. So I started a careful inspection of driveways, even asked the people who lived along there what they knew about that car. And it took me most of the day. Expense account item 2, by the way, is $1.25 for a late afternoon lunch at a roadside tavern. It was there I finally got some information.
You want another bottle of beer, huh, Charlie?
Okay.
I got one already.
Now, as I was saying, mister, I think I know the very car you mean.
Yeah?
About a 1941, tied down with straight pipes. Must have been a convertible before they throwed the top away. Makes a lot of noise.
You know who owns it, where I can find it?
Well, I think I seen it take the cutoff one morning.
Cutoff?
Yeah. When I was on my way to work here.
What cutoff?
About a mile up the road to cut off over to Byerly Swamp.
Good. Thanks a lot. Here's for the food.
Well, you interested in buying that old crate?
Something like that.
The cutoff to Byerly Swamp wasn't much more than a pair of wagon tracks through the woods. But the tire marks I was looking for stuck out like a sore thumb. And they finally led off to an old shack half hidden by a heavy thicket. Behind it, sure enough, was the car I'd been looking for. The windows of the shack were boarded up. No sign of life left. Slowly and carefully, I circled the place. Then I walked over to the door, turned the knob, opened it. And you know something? I'd been awfully wrong about there being nobody around.
Okay, mister.
Oh no, you kill him, kill him!
You asked for it.
Clip him, Ringer, clip him!
Yeah!
Oh!
Some water, Gil. Bring him to. We'll find out what he's doing around here.
Let me go through his pockets, Ringer. See who he is.
Yeah, go ahead.
The one called Ringer was too big for me. So rather than take any more of it for the moment, I lay there and let them go through my pockets. And of course, they took my gun. When the little one, Gil, started pouring water not only on but into me, well, I had to come to or choke to death.
Oh, give him the whole bucket.
Yeah, sure.
Johnny Dollar, huh? Insurance dick. No, no, don't try getting up on your feet.
You think I could if I wanted to?
Yeah, you really clipped him, Ringer.
Shut up. So the coppers have been after me since I got out of the clink, huh? But they couldn't find me, so they had to send you out. Is that it, Dollar?
What do you think?
I think you're going to be awful sorry. And awful dead. You think you or anybody else could keep me from knocking off that fancy mouthpiece after sending me up the way he did? Well, nobody's smart enough.
You're going to knock him off, Ringer, huh? You're going to kill him?
After we get that lawyer.
Well, why not now, huh?
Anything goes wrong, I might need Dollar for a hostage.
Oh, sure. Only what's a hostage?
Only nothing is going to go wrong. I'm too smart for that.
Yeah, I guess you are at that, Ringer. That business of driving by his house every day, the backfire.
That's right, so nobody worries about it no more.
And the backfire will cover the shots when you murder Lawyer Robinson.
That's right. Nobody will even notice. And all it takes is one good shot through his window. Just a little hole in that window, nobody will notice unless they go up and look at it.
An elaborate scheme like that just to show how smart you are?
No, because knowing I'm on the loose again, he has that house locked up like a bank vault. Not even Gil and me could get in without setting off an alarm. And he keeps the blinds down at night. Can't even see him in there.
But every morning at the same time, he's there at the window. So now that he's home, we get him. Tomorrow morning...
Shut up, Gil. Soak up some of that rawhide so we can tie him up and get out of here.
Yeah, sure, Ringin.
I want to get some food and some sleep. Then, Dollar, we'll be back to see you in the morning. And after we do, you won't see anything anywhere anymore.
Wet rawhide that shrinks when it dries, cuts into ankles and wrists like a steel band. By the time they finally left in their hot rod, the pain was excruciating. Sure, I could roll around a bit, maybe even out the door. What good was that? There was nobody. Nobody ever came around this neck of the woods. So I lay there, straining against the bonds, hoping they wouldn't cut off the circulation completely as the rawhide slowly, inexorably... Wait. It was raining, raining hard. I rolled myself painfully out the door into a puddle in front of it. It seemed like hours. It was hours. It was long after daylight before the rawhide finally stretched enough for me to get a hand free and take off the rest of the thongs that bound me. I looked at my watch. 8:15, which meant they'd done their job. And yeah, now they'd come back here. Then I heard it. The hot rod coming down the soggy wagon road. Quickly, I ducked back into the shack, waiting behind the door.
Storm to cover us, too.
I don't get it, Ringer.
So he wasn't there at that window means somebody warned him. Means that Johnny Dollar warned him. That means we're taking care of Dollar right now.
You know, wait. Listen.
What?
That car coming down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I see it. It's a girl that lives across the street from that mouthpiece.
What's she doing out here?
I don't know. If she pulls in here, we start shooting first and find out afterwards.
Hey, she is. Here she comes.
Look out. Shoot. Let her have it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you don't, baby. No.
Dollar, I'll kill you. I'll blast you. Oh, no. No.
Betty.
Johnny. Johnny, if I hadn't run into him, he would have killed
That's
me.
Okay, honey. You did the right thing.
When you didn't come last night, and this morning when the man at the roadhouse told me where he'd sent you to find that hot rod.
Honey, no.
So I told Mr. Robinson to stay away from his window, and I came as fast as... Oh, are you all right, honey? Are you all right?
Yeah, sure. A little wet and tired.
Johnny, I was so worried. I was so worried about you.
Well, I'm sure glad you were. Thanks, honey.
Oh, do that again. Sweetest kiss.
Run over me. Try to kill
oh,
me.
Oh, shut up, Ringer.
You think I'm gonna...
Yeah.
Can't you see I'm busy?
Yes. More, Johnny.
It was Betty Lewis who really saved the life of that insurance attorney. So most of this expense account covers some well-earned entertainment, plus a little gift for her. No, not an engagement ring, but a big jug of my sin. But I must admit, she certainly makes me think about the merits of... yeah. Expense account total, $450 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
goes our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week. Well, next week, the funniest combination of names I ever saw. And, brother, what trouble they cause. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Horace Lewis, Barney Phillips, and Tom Holland. This is Jim Matthews speaking.
Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Days. If you enjoy our show, please do take a moment and send us a kind review. And remember to share our show with others. Until next time, everyone, stay safe, and we'll be back soon.